In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to them and confront them. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We take a look into a case involving a long-term gang stalking situation. Our guest is Sandra Cardoso, who was born in a Portuguese colony in the coastal city of Lobito, Angola, in Africa. For a number of reasons, she fled Lobito with her family to Portugal. Sandra was an outcast within her family. She lived in Portugal for about a decade and moved to Holland in her late teens. That's when, as she explains, she found herself on the radar of the local police, who, with municipal employees, networked and set an organized stalking campaign against her. It lasted for many years, and had taken her just as long to connect the dots. I received an email from Sandra explaining her story. She listened to Sean Ross's interview, and she thought, hey, this happened to me, and I need to get this information out. She survived being thrown out of a second-floor window and other attempts on her life. Sandra is now living in Portugal. However, she's homeless and without her son. In a quick aside, there are several films that clearly portray or fictionalize organized stalking, such as The Truman Show, The Adjustment Bureau, Ultrasonic, Control Factor, and Earth Killer. There are many more. Others include A Scanner Darkly and Gamer that reference nanotechnology and handlers. These movies are from nearly 10 years ago and part of a campaign to invert and condition minds into thinking this is only relegated to dystopian fiction. Well, okay, Sandra joins us now. Sandra, welcome to Another News.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good, and I thank you for contacting me to do this interview. And from what I can tell, your story illustrates a long-term harassment campaign. And if you would, please tell listeners where you were born and what it was like growing up there.
I was born in Angola. It was a Portuguese colony. And growing there until my 9th year, well, it was nice. But my personal life was not so nice. But Angola is a beautiful country, so.
What was the situation that made your family move to Portugal?
Evacuation because of the war, for the oil that was found there at the north and north Angola, and because of the diamond. So the Netherlands had possession of it. Actually, it was the Netherlands who did the war, who mined the whole country because of Shell. It was just the Netherlands trying to get oil as cheap as possible. So, yeah, because of the oil and the diamonds, they mined the whole country. And we were, let's say, lucky because we were evacuated to Portugal, where my own father and also stepfather come from.
How old were you when you lived in Portugal, when you moved there?
Yeah, I was just 10 years old. It was in 75. It was not easy because we had hoped for better life. But when we arrived there, it was totally different. We were called blacks. We had to go back to the jungle, and yes, it was hard survival in Portugal in 75. Now it's a little bit better.
Let me see if I understand. So when you moved to Portugal, even though you were from a Portuguese colony in Angola, Africa, you weren't really well received in your community in Portugal.
No. White supremacy is in all Europe. Actually, it comes from Europe and it's spread all over the world, of course. But, yeah, in 75, that was more noticeable. It was
Yeah, they just would flat out call us black and go back to the jungle.
So you were around 10 years old, and you kind of grew up there until your late teens. And then tell listeners what your family situation was in Portugal, just so we get a background of what you went through.
Well, my own childhood or life, it has not been easy because my mother did not like me at all. I mean, I was born out in an undesired connection or sex or whatever. I mean, I never saw the guy, the father. So, but I know he is Portuguese. And so my life was difficult with my mother, and together with the fact that I was not accepted as a person and that I was an intelligent young woman. And so I tried a better lifestyle or better ways of life outside of Portugal. And I went to the North and European countries, and I went to Holland.
You said problems started in Holland around November 1997. You filed a complaint against a police officer where you lived. Now, past guests have talked about various types of organized stalking, and they include getting on the wrong side of local police. And a past guest, Helen Chorba, who was on, she refused advances from a police officer in her Pennsylvania town. And for years, she's endured harassment and EMF torture, she describes. Yeah. And I mentioned this to draw a parallel with your case, where years worth of harassment was triggered by one situation with local police. And I know we're jumping ahead and we'll fill in some of the blanks, but when you moved to Holland, you had a situation. And let's go right to that situation. Please tell listeners what happened.
I had a situation in a disco, in the local, very little disco. And the doorman, he kicked me on my way out. And he stole 100 guilders. It's about now the half of the something like 45 euros now. But it was then 100 guilders he took from my purse, because I showed, you know, come on, I have my money. I don't need to do any scam. So he grabbed that money out of my purse, and he punched me on my face. And I went out crying, you know, and I called the police. And there came one police man in a bus, because he actually is a dog trainer. He said he was in the surroundings and he heard a call, so he came. But I had to stay far away from the situation, like more than 20 to 30 meters away from the situation. And he was talking to the doorman, but they were like buddies, you know, shaking hands like buddies and laughing. And he stayed so long there that the radio in his car was calling all the time, but he didn't go. He was just between friends. So I left the situation, and because it was like Friday evening, I thought, all right, on Monday morning, I go to the police station and I try to find out what happened, because this is very confusing to me. And so I did that. I went to the police station Monday morning, and there was a lady there. And she said, well, you cannot speak to a police officer. Civilians are not allowed to talk about the work of a policeman, you know. Civilian has nothing to point about that. At first, I didn't want to complain at all. I just told her, please, can I speak to this policeman? because I'm confused about the situation, and maybe he could even explain me what was going on. Listen, I was very naive about these criminals, these crimes committed by police. I would never have believed.
Did you finally speak with an officer?
No. She didn't allow me. It was no. That was not possible, and I was kind of behaving really bad that I wanted to speak to him about the work, about his behavior, about what happened. I was absolutely not allowed. And so I sat down and I said, listen, I'm not leaving until I speak to him. And then she shoveled, I don't know if it's correct English word, but she put a form in my hand. It's like a pamphlet. I don't know if it's a good word also in English now. It's a form where I could fill up my name and what happened and what police officer. And she said, well, when you fill it up, then the mayor will call you. And then you will explain the situation to the mayor. And the police officer will be there.
I understand. Okay. And at the time, what were you doing for work in Holland?
Yeah, I was working in the county hall. As I worked there in the reception, at the reception.
I understand. Did you see a lot of police officers at your job?
While I was working there, I was totally clueless about these kind of things. I was very, very naive about these situations. This is a total shock for me when I understood what people can do with their positions and their powers. I thought they do that to each other when there is heavy criminality or they steal from each other or whatever, you know, but they just pick on civilians because there is another slave of them or they own another person in Hilversum because that's what they say, they own you. And they owned him since he was 11 years old because he slammed, he hit him on his face when he was 11. Mm. Because he knew him from the neighborhood, you know. And there was something, and this boy, out of naughtiness, he hit the policeman on the face. And from there on, they owned his life. They did everything to him. It's so sad.
Yes, and for listeners, this is Hilversum, Holland.
Yeah, Hilversum, Holland, the Netherlands.
This event started in November of 1997, so that's where we're at in the timeline. And again, this was the event that triggered years and years of harassment and organized stalking against our guests.
And family members, yes.
And family members, okay.
Now,
Sandra, if you would continue, please, with what happened with the meeting with the mayor and the police officer.
Yes, the mayor was a woman, and she totally just said, well, you have to take the complaint out, take it out. And I say, why? You don't even ask me what happened. You're not interested in what I have to say. And I really, again, I was naive. I didn't understand. And she said, and she asked me, do you want to die? And I said, oh my God, I came here to talk about the situation. And now you're asking me if I want to die. It was a question out of another world. I did not understand. It was, some people are naive. There are many people that don't know about this thing.
And this is because you're filing a complaint against an officer,
yes,
who did not follow through on an event where you were assaulted by a doorman. Did he write a report or anything?
I don't know what he did. about that. I only know what he did to punish me. And it's not only him. They are like a gang. They are a heavy gang. Very heavy. Very heavy. They have everything under control, you know. And the weed, Holland is famous that you can buy weed there. You can guess who is the boss on the growing grass for the coffee shop.
Yes, I understand.
They own everything.
So she says, do you want to die as a threat if you followed through on your complaint? What happened after that?
Well, I got confused, and so I tried to put my points on the table, and she said, well, if you don't take the complaint out, I clean my hands of what's going to happen to you. And I could not understand what she was meaning. I thought she was crazy. You know, it's silly of me now, but actually also not, because they educate us from school that the police are good people, you know, that if you are in trouble or in danger, you can call the police. Never know. You should know this is the last person you have to call.
It's really interesting, Sandra. In one day, I received two emails from listeners. One was from you. Both of you described a hardship and harassment and used the word demonized. This is really odd, but it happened. How long did it take for you to put the pieces together that an organized campaign of stalking was set against you? You wrote in your letter to me that in Hilversum, literally every instance and everyone involved treated me strangely. But innocent as I was at the time, I couldn't figure out what it was. I just thought they were crazy. Would you talk more about this, please?
The thing is that one person or a few persons decide to demonize you. It means that they make out of you another person, What they start to say about me is that I killed a woman and I cut her in pieces. But I could not go to jail because the law in Holland sucks. The policeman went about me like this. That I killed a woman, I cut her in pieces, I am up to them, I am borderline, schizophrenic, psychotic, and people can never expect me to behave normal because I act suddenly crazy. So let's say we are just having a conversation and we are sitting having dinner, and suddenly out of nowhere I just throw things at you or want to stab you with knives or things like this. So when people, civilians usually civilians, they would look at me as if it's like they had fire in their eyes, you know, and they talk to me and they are expecting, they are looking for the craziness in me, but they are the ones who have this crazy look in the eyes. It's a wild look. It's a wild expression in the eyes. They are hungry, or they look for the sensation. The sensational aggression that comes suddenly out of me from the story they heard. I am one of the most peaceful persons I know, although I can defend myself. I would never cause damage or just aggressive to anyone unless it was in defense, self-defense, or protecting someone or an animal who is weaker. But so they demonized me in this town so badly that I was very much harassed, and I was stalked for many, many years, and took a lot of aggression. My apartment was broken in and totally destroyed. There was no furniture, nothing standing besides the fridge. It was all damaged.
Sandra, you had gotten some unwanted attention in your job as a receptionist. Can you describe that and how that connects in with the harassment that you've gone through?
Well, I am attractive woman, let's say, and I got a lot of unwanted attention, but at the time it was handy, and this attention was from co-workers, not especially from police officers, but working in the county hall. I also worked with let's say the boss of the gang. These police officers, they have a boss, and their boss is pseudo mayor. I got a lot of attention from these male colleagues, and I could go to parties, and, you know, I was in, let's say.
That worked for you, was it?
At the time.
What happened? Can you connect it with the organized stalking now?
Well, the point is that this pseudo-mayor and the police officers made sure that I stopped being so naive and understood that they were causing me the pain, because they want that. They want you to know that the cause of your pain, it's in their power. It's they do it to you. They want you to know. So they also make sure that people tell you in it's not they don't express it clearly. It's like they drop little bombs of words, you know. So the guy who was sent to kill me first, and he threw me from the first floor, and he was sent by the pseudo mayor, and the pseudo mayor has all the power there.
Are you saying surrogate mayor?
Surrogate mayor or pseudo surrogate mayor. Surrogate mayor is a better word, yes. He's a surrogate mayor, yes. It's unbelievable, but in Holland is how it works. Because it was a lady mayor I had to deal with when the police complaint was processed. So this mayor, she usually women don't want to do the blood ritual that mayors.
Sandra, you've in your email to me, you wrote there were four attempts on your life and during this time period. And well, one is too many, of course. But if you could just let listeners know what had happened to you.
Okay, the first I try to do it short. The first time they threw me from the first floor, it was arranged by the police officers. The police officers sent a guy, and he pushed me from the first floor through a window, and I survived the fall. I fell on my head. I survived, and the ambulance came. The guy said that I jumped. The ambulance staff didn't believe it because he has the forensic knowledge, and he says a person cannot jump from the first floor and fall on their head. So he wanted immediately to make a complaint for attempted murder against the guy. The guy went upstairs and phoned with the cops, and the thing was immediately clear out of the way.
And what building was this? Was this your apartment, or was this somewhere else?
No, it was the house of the guy himself, because I knew him. It was a person I knew, and he invited me to go up. So I went up, and the funny thing is, the woman, she was dressed like a man, and I thought that is very strange. And she had this hat. And she, when we went up, she went and stood next to a tree. And she had a camera. So she filmed the whole thing when I fell down.
She knew what was going to happen, and she went. She went downstairs and was ready to film you being thrown out the window?
Yeah, absolutely. And she filmed it. Because when I fell, and I stood up immediately because the angel Gabriel, he helped me. And he was telling me, say your name completely. Say your complete name. Speak about your son. You know, to keep me away. And then two elderly women walked by, and one said to another, "Oh, my God. Oh, that's probably a stunt woman, because there is the cameraman." Yes, the woman that I told you, she looked like a man. She was wearing clothes like a man.
All right, so you were taken to the hospital, and what happened there?
Yeah, there I was raped. I was raped. I was there for 3 weeks, and in the third week, this psychiatrist, he said I had to go to another room. And I didn't understand why. And I was packing my stuff, and he said, "No, your stuff stays here." So, you know, I am in a hospital. I cannot get out. I have a very big wound on my head. This person says, I trust him, man. Person, hospital. I would never imagine you commit such crimes. So he put me in this room. That there is only, I cannot get out because there is only, it's locked from the outside. And he prepared three cameras. I asked him, what are the cameras for? And he said, to watch you, to make sure you are okay. So he weighed me, he weighed me and my weight and my length. Then he prepared medicine, and then I drank medicine, and then we count 10. By the 7, I was asleep. And the next day, when I woke up, my body really hurt a lot. It felt like a truck ran off over me, and I smelled really bad, like sperm and somebody's ass. Kind of. It was horrible. Disgusting. They put some horrible stuff in my mouth. I. If it was sperm, it was mixed with some more stuff. I also tasted like chemical. Yeah, when I woke up and then I spewed it out and. But this psychiatrist, he placed me immediately that morning in a convent where nuns are. Yeah. And then after that, he placed me again in another recovery center, like recovery center for psychiatric patients. My wounds were recovering because I had much glass in my body from falling through the window. I had to go back to the hospital a few times to take out glass from in my body, in the wound, broken glass. In this recovering center for psychiatrist patients, it was relaxing there, but one day this guy came into my room, the guy who tried to kill me from the window. And he said that he was sorry, and he didn't do it on purpose. It was an accident. I didn't realize that the woman was filming at the time. I fell, and I was just under the blood and much pain. And I was lucky that I survived, that I kept conscious, that I didn't faint. Later, I found out, because I put puzzle pieces together, when later in the city, civilians that were sent, you know, like gang stalking and not telling me, the film was nice, you can fly, so you didn't die, so good film, you know. Because the police officers, they wanted me to know that they are the cause of my suffering. So they send people, they send messengers, they send stalkers, they send aggressors, they send thieves, rapists, everything after you. The guy who raped me in a hospital, his family from a police officer, and the guy was a necrophil. He was working, because now he's with pension. I don't know if it is. He retired. But he's a necrophil, and he worked there in the morgue house, in the morgue house, in the crematorium from the hospital. In the morgue from the hospital. Can you imagine all these women there that died? He did what he did to them, of course. Necrophil, yeah, I was raped by a necrophil, a family member of a police officer. They are all family of each other. They give these positions to each other. And this Hilversum is not it's not a big city, but it is known all over Holland because it's the TV city. There is the TV main office, let's say, there where the TV world started. There, the most studios, TV studios are there, and it's very known all over. But all the good positions, it's taken by these kind of people, and yeah, it's horrible. And they say it in your face. They say it in your face. Ons kent ons.
What does that translate to?
Ons kent ons. We know each other. We white people. We the people from Hilversum. We the Dutch people from Hilversum. We know each other. It means, we help each other against outsiders.
Sandra, I'm very sorry to hear about this. It's really beyond tragic. And I can't even begin to imagine the trauma that you've gone through and suffered. But you started connecting dots by going online and listening and reading to other people's cases.
Yes, exactly.
You were able to put some pieces together and figure out, wait a minute, this is organized stalking. This is by design.
Organized crime. Organized civil crime. I don't know if it is the right moment to say this, but in 2012, my son and I came home from vacation from Spain, and our backyard was totally destroyed. They cut down my fruit tree. Oh my God. I cried for 2 hours. So much devastation. Fruit trees, flowers, everything, you know. So much devastation. They don't stop. And they tell you it's until you die, you know. It's it's for life. I have death, a sentence, death penalty. Although officially this does not exist in Holland, but in their inside law, the gang law, they own your life. You offended a police officer. That is the thing.
That happened to Helena as well, and she's still going through it. You spent about 20 years in Hilversum, Holland. In that time, they continued the organized stalking and the abuse against you. There was another time where they tried to kill you, as you describe, and that was around January 2015. Would you tell listeners about that?
That was the last time. So the police came as if they came to my house very early in the morning. My son had just left to school, so they have everything under control. My son just had left to school, and they came into my house and took me as if they had a warrant. If I was a criminal, and they came to get me. A few cars, five women rushed into my house, and one man and a woman took me in a car to the police station, and five women stayed in my house searching for my stuff through my wall house. They took two laptops, one voice recorder, two mobiles, a camera. Yeah, they kept it as to have a reason that I am a criminal, and they have to search because I might be dangerous, you know. You know, and then from the police station, they dragged me at the end of the day, and then they put me in an ambulance, and then they drove me to a mental house. Yeah, yeah. There I have this group of doctors. They call themselves a stupid psychiatrist, and their nurses, I mean, these people may not be called nurses. They have a woman in front of them, me. I'm scared. I'm telling them, please, you must see there is a difference, you know. But because it's organized, so the boss of this psychiatry or whoever made the agreement with the police officers already pressed down how dangerous I am. So all these people who are speaking to me, they have the wild look. They have the wild expression in their eye. And it's so scary, so scary. So I have like a pair of six pairs of wild-looking eyes to me, and they are trying to get the craziness out of me. You know, I mean, it's horrible. It's hell. So they try many ways, you know, because they have this expression in their eyes that I am dangerous. And they want to see, they want to make it losing me. Oh, my God, it's so horrible. So I was half conscious because I am drugged. I was drugged like 1.5 hours ago. I hardly can sit down properly because I just want to lay down my head and fall asleep. That's how heavily drugged I am. But I have to speak to this psychiatrist that received me, the poor people. They were so afraid of me. Oh, my God. So you have this. So I am completely traumatized from what they have done to me from the morning, from 8 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock in the evening. I already had a lot of traumatizing situations in the police meditation, like no food, no drinking, you know. If I wanted to drink, I have to go to the toilet, and there was a little tap, so that I could fold my hands and drink there. These people are horrible. They are sadists, and they want to make sure you learn we are the boss. They raped many members of my family, too. I'm not going to mention them. They put my youngest sister also in jail. She was even double naiver than I was. It's very, very sad. But so in this mental institution where I am now, they put me there. It was 18th of December. And by the time it's 14 January, so 18 December 2014 until January 15, 2015. And then that day, a woman, another black woman came in late, like just before dinner time, and she only spoke French. She was a Muslima. And she had a bed next to me. And she died that night because they were in shortage of pills because the woman came late. But the woman was very depressed. And because I always ran away, I made a lot of trouble not to take medicine. This night, the staff asked me, "You don't mind to stay one night without because she needs it?" And I said, "Oh, please." And if she died, she died. I tell you, I swear, I give you the names. If it was possible, to make research about this, I give you all data. I will help you with the names and everything. It's horrible. Yes, she died. Yes, she died. Yes. Because God planned all these things. I mean, it's horrible.
I can't imagine going through this. And so you were eventually discharged from the hospital. You got out of there?
You know how? I was recording every possible conversation and what they did to me. I recorded everything. And then I asked reports of what they were reporting about me, and I compared with the recording. And, you know, they lied so much. You know, one time I was saying, "Please stop, please stop, please stop," you know. And he wrote down, he said, "I will kill you if you don't stop. I will kill you." And I have the recordings. So I have recordings with dates. You know, the dates are in the recordings, you know, in this SD card, you know. And I could compare with these reports they write, you know, the date, you know, who was working and what he found from me. What was his experience with me. And it's so full of this disgusting lies, and I could put it down with recording, with voice recording, you know. The judge, he could not. He somehow, I was lucky with this judge that they would send a judge to this institution to make sure, because the police say, "Well, she's crazy. She must stay in this institution." But I had to be seen by a judge, you know. I don't know if this is normal there, you know. It's like, because police took me in, you know. So I had to be seen by a judge. But the first judge locked me down there, of course. But the second judge, who was going to lock me for longer, when I spoke about these things, you know, to my lawyer just before I showed her the reports and the voice recordings and everything, and somehow she convinced the judge to let me go, and I escaped. I escaped. And because of the death of the woman, because I was telling my lawyer already a few times, look, they are trying to kill me. And when the woman died, I guess my lawyer believed me. Yeah.
Okay, so you managed to escape, luckily, and
oh my God!
And from there, Sandra, I know you moved to Portugal, and we'll talk about that. But you did write about something very interesting, and this is going back to the mayors, I guess the pseudo mayor or the surrogate mayor of Hilversum, and the female mayor.
Yeah.
Okay, you had written about a blood ritual that they had performed. Can you talk about this and how you found out about this practice?
Because one of the stalking scenes, you know, that I asked, who do you think you are? You think you have all this power, you know, to do these kind of things? And he said, yes, of course. You know, and he said... the name of the mayor. I don't know if I should say it here now. He said he is the second mayor. I said, but that is not possible. There is only one mayor. Yeah, but he is the one who did the blood ritual. I said, blood ritual? Yes, drinking the blood, they said. I start laughing, drinking blood, what, chicken blood? And then they start laughing. So, that was it, and then I forgot about it. I every time I thought, what crazy people! They do crazy things and they say crazy stuff. Yeah. Later, when all these things came out about the Illuminati, and then I could put this puzzle together: why this man was so powerful all his career life after being the surrogate mayor, he still had a very top position there. In the county hall, he went, I think, in 2013-15, he stopped working. He was 65.
You said chicken blood, but you wrote human blood in the...
Yes, it is human blood, because they told me later also it is human blood, you know. That day, they only stayed by laughing. When I asked, is it chicken blood? I said, drinking chicken blood? And then they start laughing. And then again, later, another situation, when I am talking about this, you know, like many years later, and I mentioned this situation to another person, and we are just relaxing, talking, and then this person said, no, it's a human sacrifice. Like... the boy who died in front of the station in Hilversum happens now and then. They call it a useless aggression. But somebody just dies. Usually young men, they get gang stalked and die, you know. And one of these is in front of the station. And I was talking with someone about this, you know. And then she mentioned that it was about sacrifice, human sacrifice.
You had consulted an ombudsman, and that's somebody who is appointed to investigate individual complaints against an administration, especially public authorities. You consulted an ombudsman. What happened?
Well, that happened a few times, consulting them and asking them for help. And their help is very limited, you know. Like, for instance, the first time they helped me, they removed the people who destroyed my backyard. They removed them from... It was my neighbor next to me, really. They removed this family to another house as to help me, you know. But so they removed So the National Ombudsman helps remove this one, and the gang would send immediately the next stalker in there, in that house. So because these are houses that I don't know how to explain it here, but it's kind of from off the government. You know, the government have these instances that they build houses for the pleb, you know, to that you can rent, you know. Because in Holland, it's a kingdom, so to buy a house, there are other things that are not so attractive about buying a house because of the ground is never yours. You always have to pay rent to the king. So anyway, I was living in a house rented, and my neighbor destroyed my backyard, my fruit trees, my flowers, potatoes, whatever I had there, and the National Ombudsman removed them. But the stalking and the abuse becomes every time worse. When I complain, when I write a complaint letter to anywhere, so the abuse becomes worse after a complaint. So the abuse became worse after 2012. So 2013, they took me in, they put me in this mental hospital, they drugged me as much as they could. And now I have a complaint going on now. There is a research going on. I'm waiting for an answer anytime, any day. But of course, I know the answer already, but I'm still waiting.
Now you're back in Portugal. Luckily, yeah, and fortunately, you left Hilversum, Holland, and the organized stalking. So have things been a little bit better for you?
Yeah. I came to Portugal because being homeless in Holland, I didn't see surviving it, not because of the cold, but the gang, the police gang would really totally take over me. So I came to Portugal because it's warm, and being homeless it's a little bit easier if it's warm.
You're not homeless now, right?
Of course I am.
You are homeless.
I have my car.
Where are you staying now?
I'm staying in a car. I have internet that I am allowed to use this electricity from, let's say it's a farm, a little farm, and there is this motor house with there is electricity, and there I have internet, and my car is just next to it. And I am homeless, yes.
If listeners want to reach out to contact you, how could they do that?
Maybe better is by email. Otherwise, I could give my phone number, but maybe it's better giving my name. That my email is my first name, Sandra, and then D-E, and then my last name, Cardoso, at hotmail.com. Maybe better if you write it on the video. I repeat it.
Go ahead.
Or you repeat. Sandra D-E-J Cardoso with a C. C-A-R-D-O-S-O at hotmail.com.
Got it. Okay, that's Sandra D-E-J Cardoso at hotmail.com. Well, Sandra, I really appreciate you reaching out and sharing these really traumatic circumstances, but more evidence of gang stalking. And I know it's not easy to do that, but I really appreciate you giving this interview. So thank you so much for being on In Other News.
I am the one who is thankful. I'm very, very thankful for this chance. Bring this to the public, to warn people that the world is not really as it's been shown to us.
police officers are not here to protect us. In fact, it's the other way around.
It sounds like a certain group in Hilversum, Holland aren't there to protect people. And thanks for sharing that. And I do hope that your situation improves very quickly, too.
Thank you so much, Jeff. You have been really, really kind to me to let me do this interview and listen to my sad story. Thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.